In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about. And some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is brought to you by Pelican Brewing. Independently brewing on the Oregon coast since 1996. Discover even more flavors from your local coast with Pelican's new craft sodas. Pelican Brewing. Born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a Monday. Brought to you as always by our great friends at Pelican Brewing Company. The return of warmer weather. Boy, was it this weekend. Even our man over there, Will Ortner, was over at the coast drinking a Pelicano. Their summer seasonal beer, it is back, available in clear glass bottles. It is refreshment that you can see. I don't know if you know this, but all of our problems in college athletics have been solved. The house settlement has been approved.
How about that?
A new era of kumbaya will take over, and joining us now to talk about that is Dan Wetzel, good friend of the program, at Dan Wetzel on Twitter. Go give him a follow, ESPN senior writer and a New York Times best-selling author. Dan, good morning to you. Is this the end to all of our college athletic issues that we've been dealing with over the last couple of years? What are the big takeaways from the house settlement this weekend?
Yeah, good luck with that. The issues are it's the feature, not the bug of college athletics. It's supposed to be totally chaotic. It's a ridiculous concept, right? The whole thing is ridiculous. 134 different football teams playing for one title, schools attached, big, you know, just the whole thing. So no, not ending anything. I mean, look, this is their attempt at, you know, they've been screaming for guardrails and limits and stability and all these things. A lot of old school coaches, particularly athletic departments and things like that. That's been their rallying cry the last few years. The wild, wild west is what college sports have become. I think it's always been the wild, wild west. We had like an FBI investigation a few years ago with like 10 guys got indicted. Like that was pretty wild.
SMU existed then, back in the 80s, you know.
The Wild West is fun. Like, how many great movies did we watch? The Wild West is not so bad. But yeah, that's what they're going with. We will see how it plays out. This is an attempt to, obviously, just on a simple overview, like, you know, amateurism is officially dead in college athletics. The concept held on for, I mean, geez, 40 years past even the Olympics gave up on it. But schools will pay athletes directly with shares of media rights and you know, ticket sales and all of their direct budgets. So there's that element right there. It's very historic. How these athletic departments will be able to manage that, they have built themselves up with the number of teams, the number of support staff, the salaries, the facilities that are so nice at so many of these places, based on a business model where they did not have to compensate the athletes or whatever the compensation was, basically tuition, room, and board was relatively low. Now every major school is going to have a $20.5 million this year, and it'll go up to over $30 million in the next 10 years at least. A $20.5 million expenditure. So even the biggest schools, like an Ohio State, that's still 7-8% of new cost, right? Now, maybe they can absorb it, but how do you absorb it at a smaller school? Can you afford all $20 million? Can you afford to spend $20 million and still have a swim program or a tennis team or things like that? Will sports get cut because of this? You have to, you know, where do you invest the money? It's got to be in football and men's basketball because those are the only sports that return dollars on investment that then funds the entire athletic department. So spending money on a star quarterback that fills your stadium and wins you games and does all that returns investment. You could get the best, you know, swimmer and it doesn't. Michael Phelps wasn't making money for wherever, you know, so you can't. You have to invest in football and men's basketball, so can these other sports thrive? So there's a lot of issues there. Then there's just the practicality of, like, since when did anyone ever follow the rules in college athletics? Can you determine how much they're going to limit these NIL deals and say, well, we have an algorithm that tells you what what's a real deal and what's not, what's within the market value or not. How is that going to sustain against legal challenges when you're talking about, you know, the basic tenet of you are what your your value is, whatever someone's willing to pay for it, right? So there's a million questions going forward, tons of uncertainty, but this was a step by the establishment of college athletics to create something that has some structure to it, whether it stands or not.
Well, I'm curious, Dan, your thoughts, because you were a really good piece on ESPN.com about, you know, used Alabama as an example and talking with Greg Byrne, who's had really, you know, notable stops at Arizona and now at Alabama. I'm kind of curious going forward. So it's a weird thing. We have a salary cap, but we kind of don't, because NIL is still allowed as a side to pay players, and it's not going to count against your cap. They also have the collective issue, and the collectives, they say, are not things that should be approved. And so the collectives, you know, are going to figure out how to make it approved. And so we do have a salary cap, but we really don't. And you talk about the old West, like, I feel like it's actually going to get dirtier somehow. Am I wrong in that read?
Yeah, I found the last few years, I get there's a lot of things fans don't like, particularly the transfer portal is what fans don't like. Well, they don't like it when players are transferring out. They like it when they transfer in, but they don't like the out. But there's a lot of things that fans understandably kind of reacted to, like, I'm not really comfortable with this, or this takes some used to, or I just don't like this, and all of that is fine. But I found that when things are on the table, opposed to under the table, it's just easier to know what's going on. And so if a player is sitting there saying, hey, I'll transfer to your school for $1 million, at least you know. Where it used to be like, well, is this did they you know, underpay? We had NCAA investigators work in parking lots to see who had what car and why is it, you know, all of that stuff was always going on. So I found it to be actually more refreshing just to be wide open. I'm more of a free market person, just mm-hmm. personally. Let the thing play out. It didn't bother me. It was wild, but a school that wanted to win at something could now win. Your historical success no longer was the predetermining factor of whether you could win. You know, look at Texas Tech's softball team, right? They made the final game. They almost won the championship. They're paying their star pitcher $1 million a year. They're going to pay her $1.2 million next year. That doesn't offend me. Like, I'm not okay. Now, was Texas Tech ever that good in softball before? I don't personally know. But so what? If Texas Tech wants to be good in softball, let them. I think you saw in football – you saw what we went from even 6-7 years ago, where you're entering a season and it was basically like, it's going to be Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, or like maybe Clemson, maybe LSU. That was the only teams that really had a chance to win. I think you're looking at 20-25 programs that are competing to try to win. And you can bridge things like geography, right? You take the programs in your state, the hardest part for Oregon, and Oregon State, but certainly Oregon, is just you're not proximity to the talent. But, well, and you can pay for the travel of people to come and visit and things like that, all of a sudden that matters less. And you can build a team that isn't sitting there saying, well, you can't be good because you're not located in Florida or Texas or something like that. And so we saw a lot more teams get really good. The last couple of years we've had Notre Dame and TCU play for the championship. That was never happening before. Michigan won it. They hadn't been a real contender in a long time. Ohio State won it. They've been good. Penn State's going into the season maybe number one. Like, you're seeing, I'm not saying those are small operations. Oregon had the best regular season last year. These are big programs, but they weren't Georgia and Alabama, right? They weren't that level. So we saw a lot of stuff. Or Boise State wants to keep Ashon Genty and have this big year. They can pay him, keep him, great. So I never had a problem with all that. They're trying to condense that and say, well, we're going to determine whether this deal is, did you really earn $1 million? Like, if you're Caitlin Clark and you're with State Farm, or is this just a workaround to pay? I kind of was fine with the workaround.
Yeah, well, all of that is just going to lead to more litigation, which will be interesting. Dan,
yeah, who's going to decide what's an approvable deal,
right? It's just
versus
ridiculous.
Saying, like, no, that's not
to
okay.
To Dan's point on the free market, how can you tell somebody what they are or are not
exactly.
worth? Good luck proving that.
I'll give you
court.
An example.
Yeah.
What was Caitlin Clark worth if you put her into an algorithm and said, okay, we have a We have an All-American basketball player at Iowa, women's basketball player at Iowa. What is her national advertising market worth?
Right.
It's not much.
Yeah.
Until you're Caitlin Clark and you're the most marketable athlete in all of sports.
Yeah.
Then it's worth, she's underpaid.
Oh, 100%.
At the end of the day, yeah.
I would say half of whatever ESPN made during her run at Iowa is what she was worth.
Right. She ends up being underpaid.
Yes.
Opposed to, but how do you market? You say, well, she's not worth anything. In an algorithm, you say that person gets 50 grand and it's like, no, I get 20 million.
Yeah.
And because I'm Caitlin Clark. So how do you figure that out? Would they have denied all of those deals? That wouldn't be fair to her. So needless to say, there is going to be lawyers involved. Bill, the one thing, the most undefeated team in all of college athletics, billable hours.
Lawyers are getting really rich off of this. Dan Wetzel is our guest, ESPN senior writer. He's got a great piece up on this at ESPN.com at Dan Wetzel, as well as his Twitter page. You can go find it there. Last one I got for you, Dan, is just, you know, I come at this from the perspective of it feels like a very NCAA fix where it's basically like a quarter measure, and there's going to be so much more fallout from this, as we're just talking about. Does this end, and I don't know if it's in 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 15 years, who knows, does this end in any other way other than collective bargaining, unionization, full contracts? Like, it seems like that's where all of this is heading, but we're trying to do everything we can to solve the problem before we get to what the ultimate solution will be.
Yeah, the hill they seem to be willing to die on is not letting athletes be employees of the school, even though the schools employ tons of students.
Yeah.
They do not want them to be athletes. They don't want to be employees. That could cost them a lot of the smaller sports could get cut and things like that. I get some of their concerns. I just don't know how you get there. You basically need to make them employees, and then you need to collectively bargain. By the way, this players union of college athletes would be extremely weak. A union's only power is its ability to strike, and you're never getting 10,000 athletes to all agree. It's hard to get 1,000 people at a parts manufacturer in one town in Ohio to agree to a strike. And they're all of the same, you know, they live next to each other. They make the same amount of money. They go to the same schools. Their kids are in the Little League team together, and it's hard to do. You're never getting college athletes to strike. It's never happening. So it's actually a pretty weak union, but you also have rules all over the country, like public employees can't be in unions or this or that. There's 50 different laws. So at some point, they're going to have to be employees. They're trying this. Maybe it buys them X number of years, but I don't see how in the end the Supreme Court is going to say, cool. I don't see how boosters and coaches are going to be like, you're right, I'm not going to pay someone a little extra on the side, or I'm not going to try to bend this rule. We've never seen that in generations of history, and I'm not really sure how this actually works in the end. But this is the attempt, and this is where we're at. Step one.
Yeah,
step one.
Final one for you, Dan, because we appreciate your time this morning. We love having you on the program. You wrote a great piece. Do you think that they solved the portal problem? Not so much that kids can't transfer ever eventually, but just the year to year, season to season, like, it's hard to follow these teams now, no matter how much of a diehard you are. Football's tough because there's so many players. Basketball, it's like, how invested do I get? They're all going to be gone next year. Do you think that they'll ultimately kind of figure that part of it out?
Not until they can collectively bargain. I don't know. I mean, it's a federal judge in West Virginia who ruled that the portal can go. I mean, how do you make someone go to school somewhere?
Yeah, touche.
At the end, those are the things the judge comes up with, right? Like, okay, I think everyone would agree we shouldn't have two transfer portals in football. You shouldn't be able to transfer after the season and then after spring practice.
Yes.
Just logistically, you can be pro play, but at the same time, how do you tell someone who goes through spring practice, sees they're not going to play, and wants to transfer to somewhere else they can play, or just sits there after their spring? I mean, kids transfer colleges all the time. But you know what? I want to move back home. I want to go there. And then you get into this waiver process, which was one of the problems, and teams denying it. And everyone's got an uncle on dialysis or something. They got to go home and, you know, some sob story. It's just like, at some point you either have to have a contract with someone like, nah, you're here for 2 years, or you ain't playing, you ain't going to college. But how do you deny someone the ability to earn a living or pursue an education? You know, the Sherman Antitrust Act is very, very pesky for the NCAA. They're not big believers in it, but the Supreme Court is. And so this is a real tough thing. The transfer portal, it can be very, very frustrating. But it's not a simple solution of just being like, can't leave. Because if it was your kid, if it was your, you were the player, you'd be like, hey, I got a better opportunity here. And if I have, if you work without a contract, right, at any job, and someone else comes in and says, hey, we'll offer you more money or we'll offer you a better opportunity, you're allowed to go. Now, if you sign a contract, you might have to play that out or there's going to be remedies. But if you don't, and you can't just sit there and say, well, I turned down this job this week, but another job came in the next week. Like, there's no windows. So even the windows could be considered illegal. It's just, it's very complicated. They're trying to jam a square peg in a round hole, and they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, great stuff. Dan Wetzel, ESPN senior writer, New York Times best-selling author, at Dan Wetzel on Twitter. Go check out his great work on this. The column is up at ESPN.com and his Twitter account. We appreciate the time, man, all breaking down all of this. Hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Take care. Appreciate you.
There you go. Dan Wetzel of ESPN. Yeah, this is going to end well. The Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. With the return of warmer weather, Pelican brings back its summer seasonal beer, Pelicano, available in clear glass bottles. It's refreshment that you can see. What the hell's going on? We'll try and break it down next on The Fam.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.